Good evening and welcome back to Editing Aloud. I have with me, as always, a panel of South Africa's best and most well-informed journalists. In a week of real shockers, we've had last week's announcement of the cabinet, and fresh on that announcement, we get the shock of South Africa's latest economic growth numbers, or rather, not growth. Samantha, minus 3.2% in the first quarter. Is this the kind of cabinet that can get us out of it?
Well, yes, it certainly was a shocking number. And I mean, in particular, agriculture and manufacturing were the hardest hit. Look, only time will tell whether the cabinet is going to be able to help us get out of this quagmire. But we do have some positive signs. I think there's a renewed effort with the combination of economic development and trade and industry on industrial policy. There are some plans to develop sector plans for not only just the existing ones, which is automotive, as we know, clothing and textiles, but to extend those. So if we can actually implement our policies, our existing policies, and come up with sensible new policies, we may see some traction. But it's not going to be easy.
TJ, minus 3.2% quarter on quarter, which gives us actually 0% for the year, or even a slight minus, making this potentially a negative year. Now, how does it get that bad, and how did economists not see this one coming?
Well, I think on the ground, anecdotally, you'll see the economy is not growing. And I think economists, they have models and they build it out. So, I mean, that might be a reason why they were a little bit off. But the other reason is it gets a little bit amplified because you have a quarter-on-quarter number that you then have to annualize. So you times it by four, basically. So the quarter-on-quarter would be minus 0.75. But to get it to an annual number, you just times it by four. Or, well, that is very simplified. So I might sound stupid. I might get a lot of tweets from other economists, but that's it. from economists.
even a little bit worse than expected, times it by four, annualized, and you get a much worse.
Yes.
But nonetheless, I mean, even if we look at the year-on-year number, Sikonati, I mean, it's looking at zero for the year. Now, surely that is a train smash.
Let's make it worse and say the population is already growing at 2% per annum. Now you ask the question, is this the cabinet? And I'm so sorry that Samantha is this optimistic. I'll tell you, we've got totally the wrong cabinet. First, we were promised a massive cut. Ramaphosa only got rid of six ministries and merged them, and keeping the back office staff or the civil servants behind them. And then Samantha is talking about Ibrahim Patel being the trade and industry minister to reignite growth. He's a communist who hates business. He thinks he's all there to really mess up the country. So it's not going to work. A country that wants to grow rolls out the red carpet to investors, and they are not ashamed of the word profit and capitalist. We don't have that. We have Tulas Nlesi, Minister of Employment. What on earth is that? And that is Tulas Nlesi, the Minister of Fire Pool in the Jacob Zuma era. So I'm afraid we have again shot ourselves in both feet. And that was even before Ace Magashule and his Reserve Bank people dual mandate yesterday. So, yes, welcome to junk status.
Genevieve, is Sikonati being unjust? And Sam, I'll have to give you a right of reply here. But Genevieve, is Sikonati being unjust about our brand new cabinet with 34 deputy ministers and only 28 ministers?
Not really. Let's face it, politics was the winner in this one. And someone put it to me earlier this week, Cyril Ramaphosa has a lot of political bills to pay. I agree. I don't think Ibrahim Patel is the right person to lead DTI and economic development. But again, it was then the Communist Party, the alliance partners, they needed to sort of curb what they call the neoliberal views of Tito Mboweni. And so we put EP there. The same with Tulus Nlesi. You need the union supported Cyril. They supported him from ahead of NASRIC. They were one of the first ones to come out and endorse him. So you need a unionist in a portfolio that can rally those sectors to support you. So again, it's not really about the country in a way. I think it is more about politics and making sure that everyone's happy, because politically we're going to NGC next year. Cyril needs the support. And there are a lot of old faces still
there. Do we have enough people who might be focused on growth? Because certainly the promise is we're focusing on growth and jobs. And if nothing galvanizes people into action, minus 3.2% should surely.
And coupled, of course, with our very high unemployment rate.
Yeah. I mean, Sam, are you being unjust?
No, I don't think so. But and I would also agree with Sikonati and Genevieve around the cabinet, and it was disappointing that it wasn't cut more. And I also was intrigued by the deputy ministers, the double deputy ministers, that I would have expected you could potentially justify two deputy ministers, say DPE, because of the amounts of work they have, or possibly even a treasury because of the kind of critical nature of that department. But those are not the departments that got double deputies.
I think we must also just keep, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa did basically say, though, that this was the start of the reconfiguration. And you can't do a wholesale cut right at the beginning. Again, the unions have this big issue about job losses and that. So you have to sort of, I guess it has to be done incrementally. And I also think that some of those deputy ministers...
Excuse me, I believe you are being too optimistic, unnecessarily so. Cyril is not new in the government.
Yes.
Been there as deputy president of the country for the past 5 years. And in that time, he's seen exactly what works and does not work. Let's just say he has not seen what works because nothing has been working. So he's seen what doesn't work. You can't just, you need to do it step by step. You've had 5 years and has been president for about 18 months. And this is no time for experimentation and taking it step by step. We are in a crisis. 40% of the people of this country are unemployed. Even more will be unemployed with this kind of growth. The brains and the attitude that we had when we created this crisis is what we still have today. Can it fix the crisis? Absolutely not.
I agree, but that's when I said the politics.
But
is
if
what's
it's the politics, then we're never going to get out of this. If the politics are driving cabinet appointments instead of the economy and the need to grow the economy.
And the needs of the people.
Yeah, then we're never going to get out of it.
TJ Stratum, I'm going to let you in here.
Wholesale privatization.
Wholesale privatization. Let's not go there quite yet.
Wow.
But part of the clutching at straws to get us out of what's potentially another sort of recession is the Reserve Bank. So
interesting, yes.
It feels like it's like Groundhog Day, you know, again, the mandate. The Reserve Bank must add growth and employment to its mandate of price stability. Mm-hmm. Well, so number one, is this the solution to our growth problems? And number two, where the hell does this come from yet again?
Well, if the Reserve Bank is the solution, then we've got a bigger problem than we think. I mean, what does the Reserve Bank do? They have a few levers to pull. So it's the interest rate. That's it. I mean, the talk of quantitative easing is, that's bizarre. That's something you use when the interest rate is zero already and you have no other tools. So, I mean, that it just tells you that the debate around it is not that informed at the moment. I'd say, hell, the Reserve Bank may be a bit conservative. Yes, there are a few times that they could have cut the interest rate. But, again, not to create jobs. I mean, I think we've had lower interest rates without full employment in this country.
Jobs. And indeed we have, in fact, as a couple of people have pointed out, 10 years ago when Pravin Gordhan was first appointed finance minister, we had this exact debate. Mm. And Pravin Gordhan wrote a letter in 2010 to the then Saab governor, Reserve Bank governor, Jill Marcus, saying, "Dear governor, please take into account growth and employment when you make your monetary policy decisions." I mean, why don't we just copy and paste and do that again? I mean, Genevieve, what is the politics here, and why can't we just go back to the letter? The Reserve Bank mandate already is a flexible mandate that includes it. What is the issue here? This is politics, surely, not economics.
This is definitely politics.
So what is the politics
here? It's that proxy battle between the pro-Cyril Ramaphosa camp, the cleanup crews, they call them, and then the former pro-Zuma camp, now I guess more around Ace Magashule.
The Saxon world
Shabin. Because this debate kind of, look, they spoke about it in Mangung. I went back and looked at the Mangung resolutions from the 2012 conference. There was nothing about the Reserve Bank in those resolutions.
2012.
And they keep saying, and in their resolution from Nasrec, they say, going back to 2012 resolution, we come back to the... But there is no mention of the Reserve Bank in 2012. So this sort of popped up a especially in the run-up to NASREC, you had people like, at that time, Mzwanele Mani, who was working for the GUPS at the time, very vocal about it.
And that was about nationalization or about the mandate? Well, because it was nationalization, now it's the mandate.
Exactly. There's confusion. Mm-hmm. People don't actually know what's what. Because yesterday, Ace Magashule makes this statement about expanding the mandate. But no, we don't. Then they ask, well, are you saying that we need to amend the Constitution? Because even adding to the mandate surely needs a constitutional amendment. He goes, no constitutional amendment. We're happy with the Saab. Well, then why are you talking about the mandate? And there's this disjunction. And then, after all of this and everyone's up in a tiz about it, we have Enoch Godongwana, who is the subcommittee head for economic transformation, having to backtrack on ACE's comments and go, no, this wasn't discussed. Tito Mboweni, also up in arms.
I'm not sure why people don't go back and look at the Constitution. The Constitution actually says, in the interest of balance and sustainable growth, price stability, but look at growth. And Sikonati, I mean, this kind of politics around the Reserve Bank, is this welcome to junk status? I mean, how dangerous is this from a rating agency investor sentiment point of view?
There's a country not far from here. It's the Republic of Zimbabwe. It had exactly this mandate that Ace Magashule wants. Print all the dollars you want, and we'll take the money and pay off our debts. That's the radical economic transformation / Saxon Weltschbein economics at play here. That's what we are going to get. Now, it's even worse that 80 people attend a meeting of the National Executive Committee and then they come out with different interpretation, or even the agenda is different, yet they were attending the same meeting. So I had to ask Tito Mboweni, why are you guys still pretending you are one and the same organization? Mm. Were you even in the same meeting? It's worse that they cannot agree what they discussed. Even worse that they cannot agree what they agreed on in the meeting. Now publicly they are all trying to have a meeting yet again about the Reserve Bank. They have not a clue what they are talking about. And this is a fight back by the radical economic transformation representing Jacob Zuma and his people. The people that radically transformed the pockets of the Gupta family, they are now trying to win back, because this is how you destabilize Cyril Ramaphosa. In fact, make him fail and then blame him for the failure, as Justice Malala put it. You sow enough doubt, create havoc in the markets, and say, Mr. President, you have failed. Before you came in, we were growing at 1%. We are now in a recession.
Jen, we've got a minute to go. I just wanted to ask you, and impact on the markets and on investor sentiment. Let me ask TJ, and we'll come back to you, Jen.
Yeah, so we saw a bit of a move in the rand yesterday, but I think these kind of pronouncements aren't taken that seriously anymore. I think that's the scariest thing. I mean, if this was from a platform where you thought it would actually happen and happen soon, the rand would tank on the day. It would be 10 or 15%, but it's just not taken that seriously anymore.
And the other big news of the week was CEOs walking out of the public sector. We've lost the Eskom CEO, Phakamani Khadebe. We've lost the South African Airways CEO, Buyani Jahana. Sikonati, what chance do we have of turning around the SOEs if nobody wants to work there anymore?
Hilary, even the Black Management Forum said, please, black people, don't apply for those positions yesterday. Now, those are great thinkers, am I right? Black Management Forum, they really are the best people you can find. Even they say, don't touch those jobs anymore. What chances do we have? South African Airways was established in 1923. All the governments, all of them, have been trying to make it work and failed. Eskom was established 96 years ago. All the governments in South Africa, be they apartheid, colonialism, imperialism, and democracy, have failed. Now you've been trying for 96 years to make these companies work, and you think you're still going to succeed in 2020, 2019? I'll tell you, there's only one constant in all these companies. There's a shareholder that has never changed. And that is the problem.
TJ Stratum wanted wholesale privatization. Make us the case.
I just floated it. I don't necessarily want it. But I mean, I think if there's a way to get private partners involved in many of the SOEs where they'd want to be involved, I think that's the way to go. But that would have to come with some management and a lot of things with that. So, I mean, ideally you'd split SAA into different parts. You take what was, I mean, I haven't seen the numbers recently, but what was usually a profitable part of the business, Mango, you'd split that out, sell that, use that to recapitalize SAA in some sense. Locally, you don't let SAA fly at all. You let SAA be a certain routes national carrier, and those are strategic routes. They might be profitable, they might not be, but at least you don't aim for profit. You say, we have to have flights going to Beijing. We are willing to pay for it. That's what we need to do.
I beg to differ. You've only had one shareholder for 85 years. You've had thousands of good people, including the guys who have just left. This minister and the previous ministers and the future ministers will fail if the shareholder is still the same. The problem is not people unable to run the companies. The problem is the shareholder. Look at the example of Telkom. Perfect. The government sits at the government offices and let professionals run the business and pay dividends and taxes. South African Airways don't know what a tax is. They don't know what a dividend is. Because you've got a shareholder that think they know better. And that has been the case for 85 years. You can split it into three companies. You will be creating three different streams of management, very expensive. What you need is get out the politicians. That's not a government department. I actually am arguing that case in Business Day in a column I wrote today. That's not a government department. It is a business. If you cannot make it a business, get out. Comair has been making profits for 71 years, flying the same routes. Tell me what's so difficult. The only problem is the government owning shares 100%, interfering and appointing people when it knows
but
absolutely
Comair
nothing.
Too, there's a CEO going vacant. We have a Comair CEO who's yes. just
he has
retired. Had
his fill,
that?
He has made dividends and paid, he has paid taxes. He has paid taxes and everything. Now he's like, thank you. Actually, 7 years ago, Comair said, oh, we'll happily run South African Airways for you.
He did, actually, Eric Fencer did say that on his way.
Yes, I can see your point for SAA, but Eskom, would you want that in private hands?
Yes, absolutely.
What about companies that manipulate energy markets?
There are companies that manipulate everything.
I'm going to give Genevieve a chance here to come in. I mean, the politics are such that, I mean, we can fantasize about privatization, but it's not going to happen. So what is the solution to the sort of politics of the SOEs that are driving CEOs out or causing the appointment of all the wrong CEOs? I mean, is there any movement on that, Genevieve?
Not that I know. I think the issue, and it's a broader issue, and it comes back to what we spoke about earlier and everything, is implementation. This government cannot implement. We haven't been able to implement majority of policies for 25 years. I don't know what the thing is about holding on to these SOEs. But also, I don't know, maybe the business writers can talk about this, but why would someone, you want to partly privatize some of these SOEs, but who's going to buy or come in or put money into something that's broken? And I think, look, Pravin Gordhan did say this when he addressed the SAA staff last year when there was all those rumors that they wanted to sell. Who goes into a shop and buys a shirt full of holes?
If you get it at a good price, you will.
It depends, or if you get it for nothing and take another day. But Genevieve, I'm looking for upside here, because otherwise we're going to talk ourselves into a deep depression. So I, as you did, went to the South African Revenue Service, the new Commissioner Edward Kiesewetter's maiden media conference, if you like, yesterday, which I thought was quite encouraging. I mean, Genevieve, what did you take away from Ed Kiesewetter's first outing at SARS?
Absolutely. I quite like him. He's quite relaxed and quite informal, and I get the impression that there's no airs and graces about him. But he's also, you get the sense that he's very methodical. He's going through everything step by step, slowly. He said to himself, we need to slow things down in order to fix them and look at them properly, because we can't afford to make mistakes. And I actually spoke to him afterwards, and he was saying, yes, it's great, there's the Nugent Commission and recommendations, but he can't say, oh, Nugent says paint, and he used this analogy, paint the wall white, and so he paints the wall white. He needs to look at, why did Nugent say paint it white? Is white really the right color? So It sort of gives a bit of hope to what's happening. You know, he says he's been meeting staff. He's met 60% of the staff individually without the exco so that they can talk to him. He says by Monday, 80%. He would have met with 80%. He talks about spirits being broken. He's been quite honest about the state. I guess we all know what the state of SARS was. I've got a positive feeling about what that SARS can maybe come back to its...
And it is about morale, isn't it? I mean, Tikonati, isn't this one of the key issues must be now in all the public entities? The spirits must be pretty broken everywhere.
I know quite a few people who would not like to be... to say in public that they work for these state-owned entities, because honestly, they are an embarrassment a lot of the time. And this is, you need people, fresh eyes like Kiesvet. Of course, he's not really fresh, he's worked there before. You need people whose hearts are in the right place and people who know what they are doing, but not only that, how to get it done. So there is hope. He's talking about raising SARS revenue 10%, and I know Sam thinks that's a great number.
No, I was saying
that is the target which the finance minister set for SARS.
I think it's an unrealistic
Do you think it's
number.
Completely unrealistic?
I think it's completely unrealistic.
Sam, I mean, that's the February target
given the latest GDP figures. No matter how much compliance you have or how tax morality improves, the economy is not growing and people are getting retrenched.
What does it mean for the budget if we get another huge shortfall this year? Because we had a pretty massive one last year.
I actually think it's a very achievable number, because it's not because of the economy that the revenue has dipped. It's because no one was collecting it. So you just need one or two high-profile raids on companies and on the people illicit trade. These are the people that have not been paying tax. When you dismantle to the large business centers, you said to people, okay, it's fine, you don't need tax. Now, you just get two or three of those British American Tobacco to fix its taxes and the other tobacco's companies that are not even paying tax. You get them right, you've got your number.
Okay, well,
and then you concentrate on the... What you need is the stick, which SARS lost.
And the skills, surely, to puzzle out who's
so
getting
this
up to
is
work.
Highly yep. achievable. Particularly the low base to which we have fallen over the past 4 years.
Tito, speaking of, you know, compliance, Tongaat Hulett, what is this another Steinhoff? What the hell is
everyone
going
wants
on
to
at
call
Tongaat
everything Hulett? Another Steinhoff, and it's Steinhoff has become South Africa's Enron. And the funny thing is, Enron is gone, but Steinhoff is still there. So it's interesting that Steinhoff is this byword for everything. I mean, Tongaat announced that there could be a 3.5 to 4.5 billion rand discrepancy on the equity numbers for their results in 2018, so they're going to have to restate them. I mean, what that means, and it's all about valuations of their cane and valuations of assets. So it's this, it's sort of this recurring
let's call
theme.
Things what they are. They say past practices, which means deliberate past practices by management. Steinhoff called it financial accounting irregularities,
yes.
Which actually turned out to be fraud. So let's go ahead and say there possibly is fraud in the accounting at Tongaat, as there was in Steinhoff. Now please continue, my dear friend.
Tikonati, Financial Mail this week has a number of articles on Tongaat. I mean, have you got to the bottom of what actually happened?
No, it's going to take time. So the issue here, when they talk about valuation, do you actually the stem, the sugar cane growing, what price do you put to it? That's the thing. But at Steinhoff, it seems, at Tongaat, it seems there was a deliberate misrepresentation of facts. When you have agreed on a deal to sell this piece of land, you immediately recognize that as revenue before you get the money. So it's things like that and many more. And the SENS announcement states clearly, it says past practices inflated the value.
And also the fact that Deloitte, who has been Tongaat's auditor for 15 years, has moved off some of the people who were working on the Tongaat account. So when I say moved off, I'm not saying that they have been asked to leave, but they've got a new team now working
suspended
on...
Them.
I don't know if they've actually been suspended.
They've rotated them.
But they've rotated them, yes, including the team leader, as far as I believe, on the Tongaat account. And as we know, PwC was also brought in to kind of have a look, and this is where a lot of this is now coming
just
out.
Just like Steinhoff.
Yes. And, I mean, Tongaat, as we know, was a very successful property company. I mean, sugar, at one point, their property division was much more profitable than sugar. And ASIQA says they have been booking income on land sales that they hadn't actually received. So, yes, we should call it what it is.
So, in other words, I mean, how does this look for the country? Because is there reputational risk as it were for South Africa Inc. and its very highly regarded auditing standards and financial markets and so on?
I think there's. I think if we sort it out, then someone sits behind bars or gets disbarred, or, I mean, then it's actually a good thing. Handling it well is a good thing.
But I think we let the private sector off the hook way too much. Again, we've all forgotten about KPMG, obviously. This isn't the first time Deloitte has come under scrutiny. And then you just shift people around, and we must all be like, okay, we sort it out, and we move on.
I'm going to leave it there. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. But please join us again next week for another very exciting edition of Editing Aloud.